Welcome to the Droma Preventative Health Podcast, hosted by the Jewish Orthodox Women's Medical Association. We provide you with up-to-date information on health topics geared towards the Orthodox Jewish community. This podcast content is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended as medical advice or as a substitute for the medical advice of a physician.
Hi, I'm Adassa Stein. I'm a fourth-year medical student at SUNY Downstate. I serve on the JOMA Teen Health Committee, and I'm an interviewer for the JOMA Specialty Spotlight Podcast. The Specialty Spotlight Podcasts are geared towards pre-med and medical students interested in learning about different medical specialties. Today, I will be interviewing Dr. Dina Faden. Dr. Dina Razel Faden is a pediatrician. She started her medical education at Boston University, where she graduated from a six-year medical program in 1994. She then went back home to Miami, where she completed a custom-made Shomer Shabbos residency program at University of Miami Jackson Memorial Hospital. From there, she traveled back to the Northeast, where she worked in private practices in New York and New Jersey from 1997 to 2014. Since 2014, she has loved working at the Ezra Scholem Health Center and FQHC centered in Kiryas Yoel, New York. Dr. Faden aims to create an environment where the child and parent can feel comfortable. She sees her role as being the ultimate parent's helper and support and resource. As a native Spanish speaker, Dr. Faden is able to deliver culturally attuned care to many Spanish-speaking patients. Dr. Faden is a grateful mother of children whose ages range from 9 to 25. This year, she had the privilege of becoming a Bubby. Together with her family, they serve as Chabad Shluchim to a yeshiva in Morristown, New Jersey, that caters to male Bali Shuva. Outside of her official work hours, she enjoys bonding with her family, preparing for Shabbos meals for her husband's students, and running for exercise. Hello, Dr. Faden.
Hello.
Our first question is, why did you choose a career in medicine, and what characteristics make one a good fit for a career in medicine?
So really, I wanted to be a doctor since I can remember. I wanted to be a pediatrician. I remember when I was in preschool, somebody asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I said, a doctor. It was just like my identity. That's just what I always wanted to be. And I really didn't even question something else until it was in graduate school. And I would look around and see other people studying and being passionate about their fields. And I thought, oh, maybe there are alternatives out there, but I still felt like this was the place for me. I loved from the time that I was young, just being in a medical environment. I just felt very comfortable there. If it was in doctor's offices or in the hospital, it just felt like a very familiar place to me. And thank God it still does. Yeah, very homey.
And I guess to speak to the second part of the question, what characteristics do you think make one a good fit?
I personally love working with people. And I feel like being in medicine gives a person an opportunity to be invited to others' most personal and intimate experiences by being allowed to share in things from people's like dramatic like childbirth experiences to trauma experiences to even having somebody share with you that they had a hard night the night before and weren't able to get a good night's sleep. You know, just creating a space where people can feel comfortable and confide in someone they trust, I see as a real opportunity. So when one goes into medicine, yes, there's of course the absolute importance of giving good information, wholesome, true information, and expertise with procedures. But in order to really deliver care, it also, I feel, has to include or can include the personal part, which is what helps a person go back home and feel like they've been really cared for.
So one of the things that people have told me in medicine is that patients want to know that you care before they care what you know. And I think it is so true from my clerkship experiences that the patient first wants to know that you actually really want to do what's best for them before you can start to tell them, you know, this is what I want you to do. So I think that's really interesting what you say. But also I did also find it's kind of an interesting relationship you have with patients because they are sharing these intimate details of their lives, which creates this instant connection. But then there's also the professional layer that you're here to guide them with the knowledge that you have to help. So it is a very privileged position, I think, to be a physician and be allowed those into those intimate aspects of people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
So our next question, can you walk us through a typical day for you as a pediatrician and tell us why you decided to go into the field of pediatrics?
So I'm very, very busy. Like on my feet all the time, going from room to room to room. I often have the opportunity to collaborate with my colleagues. You know, if somebody sees a rash that they're not sure about, you know, we'll or have any question, we'll pull each other from our room to their room, or just to help each other, and that's very special. But generally speaking, it's a, you know, fast-paced environment. But the way that I try to approach that is that wherever I am is where I am. And like I'm 100% there. I try to use my body language to make people feel that. My eye contact is totally focused, you know, on the patient. I oftentimes, because as a pediatrician, will oftentimes take care of little kids that are scared. I'll oftentimes kind of crouch down below their level so that way they don't feel like I'm like towering over them. And then once they feel more comfortable, then I stand up and then have the mother bring the patient onto the exam table, or just examine the patient totally on the mother's lap. So, you know, I am often on my feet and moving around very fast.
I have to say, I really appreciate you saying that you're with your patients in the moment, because I think that I guess in the hospital, and I'm probably guilty of it as well, while you're talking to a patient, you're kind of already thinking of the notes you have to write after and the next patient you have to see before rounding at 9 and the attending comes around. And I'm sure the patients feel that. So if you're able to give them your full attention and really be with them in the moment, I think that that's very special, something that I hope to strive for.
I think I'm very blessed also that where I'm working, they understand that by my taking that approach, I am giving care in an exceptional way that they appreciate. So though it is very busy, I think that they see it as significant to give me that extra space, that when I feel like I need it, or rather the patient needs it, that I can, you know, have that wiggle room to give that extra time to the patients. So in talking about why I find pediatrics very special, you know, it's something very unique to working with children, is that they really perceive themselves as being invincible. Like they do not, if they're sick, they're really sick. Like they don't usually pretend to be sick. They can't even pretend to be sick, you know, because as soon as they feel well, they're back at them. They're playing, they're interacting. So it's very special to work with that sort of a population, where, you know, you have this this real will to be healthy. I, in my role as a pediatrician, as I said, I see myself as like the ultimate mother's helper. But how do I do that? By focusing on prevention, reassurance, like being able to tell a mother or father when it is okay to just observe something. And also having the like the sense of when something does need, does require action, and when something is really out of the range of normal. So developing that, you know, keen sense of when a child is really not well, versus where one can safely observe, I feel like is something that as a pediatrician is something that I really try to focus in on, because it's a real, you know, gift, even on the phone, you know, when I'm on call at night, to be able to reassure a parent and, you know, figuratively hold their hand through the night, you know, so that and make them feel like, you know, their child is safe or they have to get help, you know, so being able to provide that guidance, I think makes pediatrics a very unique field and opportunity to really, you know, help people, as we said earlier, in a very present and intimate and exceptional way. Line for me is I love being in the environment. You know, I love when I walk through the pediatric wards versus other wards, it just feels good to me. I love being there. And I feel like it's a real blessing to be able to spend a great part of my day in an environment that I simply feel comfortable in.
So our next question, you attended a 6-year residency program at Boston University. Can you speak a bit about this?
Yes, so it's a 6-year medical program. It was a combination of an undergrad and a medical school program. It was actually the last year that BU did it. After my year, they turned it into a 7-year med. And basically, it was a wonderful opportunity for me because I applied from high school into this program that assured me entrance into medical school. So I didn't, even when I took, for instance, the MCAT, it was kind of just like a, just to take it. It wasn't because it counted, because I was already secured a spot. And it was, the people there were really outstanding, you know, in order to get into, like, I think they had like 600 applications for, you know, 40 spots or something like that. And most, like half of the class was like valedictorians from their large schools. And I always felt like I was just very blessed, you know, to be, you know, included in this group. That it was a wonderful opportunity, you know, for me. And it basically, practically, it cut 2 years out of the process. So instead of, you know, being a pediatrician after 11 years, you know, I was out after 9 years, so ready to go.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. I have heard of 7-year programs, but 6-year is definitely very cool. So how does that work in terms of, I guess, the undergrad? Was it that you took more just like the pre-med classes and they cut out, I guess, the traditional sort of like English music course?
So you coming in, you basically place out of a lot of the basics. Like I didn't have to take English because I just placed out of it. I didn't have to take a foreign language because I placed out of it through AP courses through high school. And then you also have to do 3 summers. So it's 2 years and 3 summers. And the curriculum, there were some classes that were special for the 6-year med group. Like we were considered like a special group. So we had like, you know, our sciences were, you know, often made tailor-made for our group. But we were also enabled to, even as a first-year student, take graduate level classes in the arts. So for instance, I took a graduate level class with Elie Wiesel, as a second year student. It was a wonderful program.
Yeah, that's so unique. Wow. And I guess it was helpful that you didn't know early on from high school. You must have been a very mature high schooler.
Well, as I told you, since I was 3, I knew I wanted to do this. So it just, you know. And really, my parents were very encouraging of me to pursue this, you know, pursue medicine in this way.
Yeah, I feel like
I'm good very grateful.
Yeah, good support system is key. So our next question, what is your experience caring for the communities in and around Kiryas Yoel? And how does this experience differ from your prior areas of practice?
It's really a fascinating environment in Kiryas Yoel. I personally have the opportunity of seeing not only the KJ patients, but also the Spanish-speaking patients that live around the Kiryas Yoel community. I tend to see a lot of the girls, you know, the girls, the older girls, like let's say after 10, I see a lot of the girls for their physicals. And I also seem to see a lot of the toddlers in general, you know, also just to make it, I guess, easier, you know, for everyone, hopefully, you know, more positive experience. And then I see tons and tons of also Spanish patients, Spanish speaking patients. Both of those populations, I love working with because these parents culturally are exceptionally dedicated to their children. In different ways, obviously, but there's a tremendous, you know, commitment to the care of their children. So I love what's working, you know, as part of these parents' team, you know, as their helper, because they're so, as their official mother's helper, father's helper, you know, because they are so, you know, dedicated to their children. So it's a real privilege to be considered part of that process for them. Previously, I was working in other private practices in the, you know, just general community. And 8 years ago, I transferred here to Ezra's Chaylim. And I love it, you know, I really love it. I love the population that I work with.
It's really nice to hear that to love your work and your patients. I guess along that line, what tips or advice do you have for delivering culturally sensitive care?
I feel like I try to create a space where the patients and or parents really feel like I get them, and where they feel really comfortable to open up. Oftentimes when people come to the doctor, you know, why they come, their chief complaint is really not really, you know, why they made the effort to come to the doctor. there often time is really something underlying that's bothering them. So to create a space where they feel comfortable to open up for me is really important in the delivery of care. And oftentimes, you know, I'll have patients, you know, like if they cry or we laugh together, you know, sometimes I'm like literally doubled over laughing with the parents, just in an effort to bond with them, you know. And through that, you know, I feel like it's a real therapeutic relationship, because they've had the chance to like really feel like there's someone there that they can really talk to that really hears them. My parents are originally Cuban, and so that's how I'm a native Spanish speaker. And so oftentimes the Spanish speaking patients are surprised that you know, when I start speaking, but they soon like realize like, okay, yeah, this is someone I can really talk to that really gets me. I just think it's so important, no matter what the culture is, you know, throughout my whole medical experience, you know, just trying to get to where the person's really coming from, and what are the challenges that they are really, you know, facing? Like, what are the stressors in their life? You know, if I can meet them there and understand them, then I can really give a comprehensive care to their child.
So yeah, one in Downstate, we have a series of learning, you know, cultural competency, and one of the points that is stressed is that you have to understand where the context that your patient is coming from. So if you're telling your patient to walk for 30 minutes a night, but they don't live in a community, they don't live in a neighborhood necessarily that they feel safe doing that, or you're telling your patients to eat 3 healthy meals a day, but they're just living in a food desert and they don't have access to it, then it's just not gonna, that communication is not going to get too far. So understanding the context that the patient is coming from, I think is really important. Next question, as a primary care physician, how do you organize the visit to assure comprehensive care, especially if there are multiple patient or parent concerns to address or multiple siblings being seen in a scheduled period?
So I try to be methodical in my exam. I try to do the exam the same way every time, so that even while I'm speaking to the parent and trying to be very present in the communication, I know that I am also on the physical exam, if it's happening simultaneously, not missing anything. I also tell parents when they come with multiple siblings that I'm going to do one at a time and focus on one at a time, so that way I'm like totally, you know, I finish, let's say if I'm doing a well exam or a sick visit, I totally finish one child and then go on to the next. So that way there's clarity, you know, about the plan, the diagnosis and the plan for each child. But it can get very hectic, you know, thank God and KJ, when there can be sometimes like even like 6 kids in an exam room. And that also gives me insight into, you know, the challenge that the mother is going through, or the exceptional ability, you know, that the mother has to be able to, you know, manage all of her children, even in those that environment of being in a small room with all of her children. So I'm often in awe, actually, of the parents in that setting. And I tell them that. I try to find every opportunity I can to lift up the parents and give them positive reinforcement whenever I can. Really, they deserve it. So I'm really in awe of them. I'm not making it up, but I but I really try to not just keep it to myself, but have them leave with that sense of pride and encouragement for the care that they're giving their child.
I'm sure they appreciate that. I think we all need a little cheerleading.
We all do. We all do.
And then to the point also about, you know, being doing like the same thing over and having that sort of methodical approach. There's a book by Atul Gawande, The Checklist. He's written a bunch of really fabulous books in medicine, but he talks about when they instituted in the operating rooms before every surgery that you do the timeout, like going through identity of the patient, location of the surgery, and they saw how many surgical mishaps were avoided when they introduced this very simple concept of the checklist. So doing the same thing over and over again. And I read this book before I had started medical school, but I was still so impressed by how much it is honored in the OR. It's like, you know, no matter what, there could be the chaos, everyone's setting up. It's like, no, this is a timeout. We're all going to be quiet, anesthesia, all the scrub techs, the surgeons, and everybody respects that checklist because they've seen the difference that it makes. And I would say it's like, especially my pediatric rotation also, that there was a very methodical way that they would do the exams in the nursery. So to make sure that, you know, head to toe, and we were also trying to do this, that you make sure that you're thoroughly checking every single part to make sure the baby is leaving healthy and you're not missing anything. Mm-hmm. So I think that was a really important point. So our next question, you were recently honored at the JOMA dinner with the Outstanding Achievement in the Community Award. Can you tell us what JOMA means to you?
So I actually heard about JOMA last year, and I was so excited that the organization even existed. And then I quickly like called, and I was like, can I be a part of it too? How do I sign up? You know, I feel like it is such a privilege to be a part of this exceptional group. And at the dinner recently, I was just in awe, and I've thought about it often since, by all of these incredible women, you know, who are so together and warm and expressive and kind, you know. And generous, you know, with their time and their cell phones and their emails. You know, I'm so grateful that the organization exists and you know, literally tickled pink that I could be a part of it.
And everybody is very fortunate to have you a part of it. I'm also, I feel very fortunate to be a part of it too. I started getting involved in my third year. And it's really been nice to find these amazing people to look up to and mentors, and but also friends. So people kind of like in my stage that I've been able to connect to, that I can relate to. And hopefully I can give back to in this format, but also I guess like in mentorship to the pre-med students. Because it's a journey, so it's nice to have support.
I mean, really, I in medical school, there I actually also was very involved in these types of organizations. I was involved in something called the Maimonides Society that I was head of at BU, and along with the other medical schools in the area. Tufts, Harvard, and UMass. So we would oftentimes do events together, but this was a long time ago. It was like 30 years ago. But I didn't know that many other Jewish Orthodox women, you know, like literally like less, you know, I could count them all on one hand. So it was just amazing to walk into a room with so many women who identified themselves that way, you know?
Yeah.
And to be able to be connected to them through the chats, you know, it's really very special opportunity nowadays that one can make that connection.
If you could go back in time, given the experience and perspective you have now, is there anything you'd want to have done differently?
So I took school very seriously. But you know what? I would have taken it even more seriously. I feel like, you know, when one is in medical school and one is in residency, it's a real opportunity. And as much as I yearn so much to get finished, even to get finished with that call or to, you know, make it through a hard rotation or to just finish the whole residency and, you know, start, you know, go back to a normal life or start a new, more normal schedule. It's such an opportunity to be able to learn hands-on. So I've oftentimes even now thought, oh, maybe I'll go back and do more, you know, whenever I can. I do CME and I love it. But when you're there and that's what you're doing, you know, all the time and you don't have other responsibilities, it really is an opportunity. So I would, I guess I would have taken it even more seriously. You know, I would have appreciated it even more, tried to appreciate it even more.
So I'm applying for residencies now. I'm going for radiology and I have like an intern year before that. So it's like excitement, but like also nervous because, you know, it's like real responsibility now. You have like your own patients, but it happens to be, it's really nice what you're saying. I'm going to really try to take it to heart that, you know, to try to take every learning opportunity in the year to come mm-hmm. and in the years to come.
Yeah.
So our last question, what advice would you like to leave the pre-med and medical students listening to this podcast with?
So I would say that work-life balance is really important. I try to be wherever I am, 100%. Like if I'm with a patient in a room, I'm totally with them until, you know, they're fully cared for, and then I'll move on to the next. When I'm at work, I'm totally at work until everything is, you know, taken care of. And then when I'm at home, I try to be, you know, full on at home. I found as someone who was trying to go through medical school and residency, and keeping that balance of Yiddishkeit through and Shabbos and Kashrus, I found that when I was, because I always tried to be, that by my being really consistent with my approach, everybody around me took it seriously also, and they were more likely to bend over backwards to enable me to be off for Yom Tov or Shabbos, or just because they saw that I was so, you know, committed to it. And I saw, you know, others that perhaps, you know, weren't as careful. So the other, you know, teammates maybe weren't as likely to bend over backwards for them. And this is something that I saw like over and over again, that throughout my entire medical school, not only medical school, my entire career, that it was just really important for me to be completely straight and consistent. And in doing so, you know, people came through for me. And of course I did it, you know, as a team player, you know, like, and I would do for them as well, you know, obviously. But I have tons of stories of how people would really bend over backwards, you know, to help me. From the, you know, deans of the medical school to you know, other, you know, non-Jewish residents, you know, who really, really made an effort to cater to my needs. As a mother, I would say that as one is raising one's children, that time is so important because that time doesn't come back. And I had the tremendous opportunity to bring my kids to work with me. Some more than others, but I would like have them be, I was working part-time, and I would bring like a babysitter with me to work, and they would be like in a room in the back, and this enabled me to continue nursing easily, avoid pumping, and just be able to, you know, just see them in between patients. And I also, something that I pride myself in is that I never missed like a school play or a school event, you know, because I was working. You know, I always try, still try to make every single parent teacher conference, and, you know, if I have to leave early, I'll make up the time at work, you know, in other hours, just so that way I can be present like any other quote unquote normal parent would be, you know, that my work shouldn't interfere with, you know, being the kind of present parent that I want to be to my children. So focusing on that, you know, on that work-life balance, I think is something that I'm so happy that I took seriously along the way, and really I'm still working on the juggle because it's a daily juggle, you know, but keeping that priority in the forefront of my mind, you know, is definitely what I feel like for me is very important.
I think that's really special because, you know, we owe it to our patients, but also you have these other lives that you have obviously a huge impact on. So it's really nice that you made that effort to always be there for them. I'm sure it was tough at times.
It's really that being a parent, I mean, in pediatrics, being an experienced parent, or I'm still trying to gain experience as a parent, by the way. But I think it helps me be a much better, you know, pediatrician. The advice that I give, the sensitivity that I have to situations as a parent is much more well established at this point than it was, you know, when I first started. And I think, you know, along the lines of being like, you know, sensitive, culturally sensitive, you know, like through this experience, I can really meet the patient, you know, where they're at.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with us today. It was an absolute pleasure talking to you and getting to know a little bit about your experience.
Thank you so much for inviting me to be part of this JOMA chat and podcast. And I wish you much luck, you know, in your professional career and in your work-life balance, wherever it takes you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the JOMA Preventative Health Podcast. If you've enjoyed this, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and share this with your friends. For more information, check out our Instagram at JOMA_org. Check out our website, www.joma.org, that's JOMA.org, or email us at health@joma.org.